behind that one, because
what?
We'd love to be able to, I'm sure he could probably get us in to tour Universal Studios. You know,
he was working just great yesterday.
Jerry had some problems with it. With Dan, sorry.
All right.
Did you get a difference?
I'll go ahead and call to order for the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting Tuesday, March 15th. The audience will join the board and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Public comment number one. This comment appears for the public to address topics on today's agenda. And not seeing anybody move to the mic. Agency report. Central Iowa Tourism and Ames Convention Visitors Bureau, Allison Walker. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning. I don't understand why there's colors. No. I don't know what the colors
are.
Right.
Just go ahead and sit down. Hello.
Hey, hi, Allison.
Well, I laid a couple of things on your counter there, and some things you got by email. Just wanted to hand-deliver our annual report. We had our annual meeting back in January. And a couple things just to point out that last year, the direct spending by overnight visitors was over $107 million for Ames. And that number continues to grow, and I think it was $99 million last year, so very, very proud of those numbers. And you'll see some review on 2015, and then there's also a page that highlights some of the things that are coming up this year. Starting tomorrow, we have about 1,200 veterinary students coming to Ames for the SAVMA student American Vet Med Association Symposium, and the ISU College of Veterinary Medicine is hosting that. Great opportunity to fill the hotel rooms on spring break when a lot of people have left town. We also have our Odyssey of the Mind visit this year, 15,000 people at the end of May, right before Memorial Day. It is the 30th anniversary of the Iowa Games, so we'll be celebrating that in the month of July. And also we will have the return of the National Beat Baseball World Series, the baseball for the visually impaired. They are up to 24 teams, so it'll be a much bigger tournament than it was about 4 or 5 years ago.
That's an amazing event.
It is. It really is. Hope you can get out and cheer them on. And then we have the Farm Progress Show again in August out at the Central Iowa Expo. And it is another International Buyers Program show. So I am working with the Iowa Department of Economic Development and the U.S. Department of Commerce to recruit international delegations for that. 2 years ago, we had over 500 international delegates through that program alone, and thousands of additional international visitors, but that is a great program and a good way to really promote Iowa to the industry. And also in June, the Farm Progress Show Company will be bringing back their Hay Expo, June 22nd, 23rd. So it's going to be a big year ahead. I also brought you a copy of the wall calendar for your office so that you can see who's in town and when. And there was a list of the 2016 community grant recipients. Over $80,000 that was awarded to 46,500 that was awarded to 27 different events for this year. And also in our connection with the Central Iowa Tourism Region, we are helping to sponsor the Power of Travel Day, which is a statewide event, and they're very excited about the location for the meeting, and that is the Sukup South End Zone Club. So they're very excited to get those Eastern Iowa folks over and in there. And also, I represented the the community at the legislative showcase back in February down at the state fairgrounds as part of the Central Iowa Tourism Region as well.
Okay.
So I think that's a quick rundown of the things that you got in your packet, and be happy to answer any questions.
Sounds like we've got a lot of great things going, and that's even before the football team's going to go undefeated this year.
Question, did you all participate also at your day at the Capitol with the Ames
Chancellor?
Yes. Anything to report from that? What did you, I was unable to get down there and
they
so forth.
They love Hickory Park.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I was part of the displays in the rotunda. I did not attend the meetings with the legislators, so
okay.
I can't speak to that. But we had they had a great turnout, and all of the area legislators were there and stopped by the booth. So,
good.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for all you.
Next is the Volunteer Center annual report. Anna Owens. Consideration of minutes from March 8th and the March 8th special City of Roland.
Move approval of both the 3-8 minutes and the special election.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two? Aye. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two? Aye. Consent agenda. Gentlemen, please add road closures 1648 and 1649.
48 and
49. Move approval with noted change is?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Two? Aye. Those have been approved. Public hearing items. Introduction of elected officials and department heads. Who's doing that, Lisa?
You can.
Well, I'm Paul Toot, and I'm the chair of the Board of Supervisors. Rick Sanders, vice chair. Wayne Clinton, as always, the rock for the Board of Supervisors. Lucy Martin, our auditor. Stacey Berry, recorder. Who am I missing?
I think that's
our assessor back there, Wayne Schrigerath.
Yep.
Can't forget Wayne.
Others might step in later.
But Mike Cox.
Yeah, Mike Cox.
Jerry Moore, department heads.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm done.
Okay. Great.
You told me I could keep this brief.
Where do we like it?
So, this is the briefed version.
Ask questions as you need to.
Yeah, ask questions as you need to. Welcome to the public hearing on the proposed FY17 budget. This proposal was published in the three official newspapers on March 3rd, as required by law. The budget that is adopted today cannot be higher than published, but it can be lowered at this public hearing. And you will see that you have two options on your resolution this morning. There are handouts available that include these charts along with the proposed projected FY17 salaries of the department heads and elected officials, which does include a pay increase. The evaluations for the budget that we're putting together increased slightly for countywide, 5.25%, and rural increased about 3.7%. The rollbacks for this year are listed up there. The rollback is the amount the property is taxed upon. So if you own a residential home assessed at $100,000, the taxable value would be $55,626 in this budget. Agriculture, if it's assessed at $100,000, the taxable value would be $46,100. Commercial and industrial is rolled back to 90%, and the rest of that is backfilled by the state then. And the multi-res is rolled back this year. It's a new class. And it has the most impact in Ames. These include the apartment buildings that were formerly classified as commercial, and they were not rolled back at that point. In preparing this budget this year, the departments and work sessions held, the departmental work sessions were held in early January. Those are all out on the website if anybody cares to go listen to those. There were across-the-board salary adjustments of 2.5% and plus a quarter an hour for all staff. There are two new bargaining units this year, so that means there are five total. And the health insurance premiums did increase by 12.5% this year.
The actual increase was 12.5%, but we put in how much in the budget? Did you go back and, because originally we had put 20% in the budget, is that right?
I did not. It's still 20% in the budget.
And I just want to note that. I want to note that it's still 20% in the budget unless it's reduced here. And the intent there, that difference is, as Story County continues to try to move towards self-insurance, we're going to need to have some reserves in place.
Correct.
And the intent there is to use whatever savings we have and what's budgeted to what it actually costs us to help to build that fund. And I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. And we did not, we did not know what the premiums were going to increase to until end of February.
Right.
So we worked on the side of caution throughout the whole budget process. Case management privatization has had an impact on our community services department. It will be downsized in the upcoming fiscal year. We continued with our capital improvement plan. It was approved at the last board meeting of the supervisors, and it includes funding for secondary roads facility in Roland, for Hickory Grove Shower House and Storm Shelter, for the Prairie Rail Trail expansion at Dakin's Lake. And I cannot say that three times fast. We did continue our economic development focus. We are funding for urban renewal, for small communities, and for home-based Iowa. And the departments did continue the goal of budgeting as close to actual as possible. Overall, the budget is, the goal is to match the revenues and expenses without a significant use of fund balances, which is a balanced budget. And in this budget, the revenues are $168,800 higher than the expenses. The levying funds for the county are as follows. Countywide means every taxpayer in the county pays it. $3.50 is the maximum for the general fund per $1,000, and we are at $3.50 in this budget. The supplemental fund is limited to certain mandated services. It is also on the countywide. It is also a countywide levy. Story County pays for FICA and IPRS of the employees. Paid out of the general fund in this one. We pay for insurance out of it. We pay for emergency management agency, for district court costs, for chemical dependency, and some election costs. The county services MHDS fund has a dollar limit. That maximum levy is calculated in two ways at this point in time. The previous dollar limit for Story County is $3,066,575. The new limit is based on a per capita amount. That amount would be $4,447,000 if we were to go with that in this budget. However, the regional board makes that decision, and the regional board did decide on a levy of $2,126,000 for Story County. That is a rate of 51.517, which is also down from 0.784. from the previous year.
Yeah, let's just be clear with what's going on here, because that's sitting in front of our state reps right now. So as we sit here today, the maximum that Story County can legally levy is the $3,066,000. We don't have to levy that this year because our region asked for less than that. We're levying more like $2.1 million. But with the changes that it looks like, that at this point has come through one committee, and now it's going back to the Ways and Means Committee before ultimately it's going to get onto the floor, will increase this three, if it passes as it currently is, it will increase this $3,066,000 maximum to a per capita rate, which will translate to $4.4 million.
In this budget, and that's a per capita rate that will be determined every year by the Department of Management or state to tell us what our per capita, what our population is,
right,
to determine our per capita.
And so let's just point out that there is no other place in the county's budget where we determine taxation based on per capita. All our taxation is based on accommodation evaluation to levy rate. This will be a dramatic change. Clearly, it's an extra $1.4 million from last year's budget, but it's $2 million more than this year's budget. We need to be really, really aware of that, because that, I mean, you look at where we are fiscally, If a balanced budget is important to you, if it's something that you view as being the appropriate way to conduct business, we would be $2 million upside down, almost $2 million upside down, if this were the law of the land right now.
Yeah. Understand, the regional board still will set the levy based on the needs, and you do not have to levy the max, but it is the max has it does change substantially in this scenario. The debt service fund, we are still paying off two secondary roads bonds. Right now in this current budget, it's 18 cents per thousand. We are talking and looking to refinance those, so that will be a lower levy next year. That's also on countywide. And the rural basic is the levy, the maximum is $3.95 per thousand. All residents in the unincorporated areas pay that. This budget is calling for $3.17, almost 18 cent levy. The tax askings in the proposed budget are lower by $1.1 million, and the overall levy rate is lower by 58 cents per thousand. This is the lowest levy since the 2000-2001 budget.
Go through all that again, because I just think this is not going to be the norm. I mean, people better recognize that this is not going to be the norm, but it is special that we here in Story County, and when I say we, I mean everybody, I mean elected officials, I mean staff, department heads, we did something that doesn't happen in government very often, and that is, Lisa, go through them real quick.
The tax askings in this proposed budget are lower by $1.1 million.
So taking $1 million less from the people of Story County than we took last year.
And overall, the levy rate is lower by 58 cents per thousand.
Reduce that, and it's a balanced budget.
And it's a balanced budget.
And it's less spending than last year.
Correct.
That, I mean, and like I say, this is great. It is not, we just talked about what's going to happen with mental health.
Right.
This is not going to be the norm. We need to shoot for things like this anytime we can and be really, really aggressive trying to get it. It's just a great job by everybody.
Our revenues for the FY17 budget is presented, the amount of $37.7. Counties are required to budget by service area for revenues and expenditures, so this is broken out by the service area we're required to budget for. The budgeted revenues for Story County, 61% are coming from property taxes, 22% are coming from intergovernmental, which does include road use tax, state replacement taxes on your commercial and industrial, VPTC, those types of state replacements. State and federal grants are included in that intergovernmental. So those are our two primary sources of revenues in this budget. We do get 5% from local option sales tax, 7% for fees for services, 3% of our total revenue is TIP revenue, and 2% is from interest and rentals. The expenditures for this year's budget, $37,589, again, budgeted by service area. 30% is for public safety and legal services, which includes the services of the sheriff and the attorney's office. 17% is for roads and transportation, which is the secondary roads department. 14% of the budget is classified as administration. That includes facilities management for all the buildings, IT, the Board of Supervisors, county liability insurance, and both the auditor and treasurer's management side of their services. 11% of this year's expenses are for capital projects, which is road construction, the TIF projects, and the CIP projects. 10% is for county environment and education. That will fund conservation, animal control, planning and development, IRVM, county libraries, urban renewal projects. 7% represents health and social services. We fund environmental health, community services, VA, juvenile court, DHS local office, and many of the asset services. 4% is for governmental services. That includes the recorder's office, the auditor's election side, and the treasurer's motor vehicle side. 4% is for mental health services. That's for the local and the regional amount that we submit. And 3% of our expenses are for bonded debt service payments. Here's a graph representing our expenses by fund. The general and supplemental is the primary operating fund of the county and has the largest overall expenditures, and the majority of the revenues come in September and March with tax collections. The financial policy is to budget 25%, approximately 25% ending fund balance. This budget reflects a 29% ending fund balance. The regionalization of mental health has impacted the MHDS, as you can see, quite substantially. Fund and the expenditures at the local level have dropped. The dollars levied in this fund are sent to the region and expenses are paid at that level. The rural and secondary roads funds are pretty steady funds for us. We can budget closer to 20% ending fund balance, and those funds have monthly revenues, such as local option sales tax and the road use funds.
I think that graph says a lot. The one before it, that's all right. It says a lot about what's wrong. First thing I'd point out is the red line. We're going to see that. If the state does what it looks like the state's going to do, we're going to see that spike back up again next year. But everything else, I mean, you look, clearly a reduction in the general supplemental, but secondary roads, that is primarily due to the road use tax, which I know some people had some chagrin about. It's allowing us here in Story County, and I'm going to look at Darren as I say this to make sure I don't get way out, 282 bridges. We were on pace doing two a year to replace our bridges every 140 years. Which is a mythical number, but that's what we were on pace to do. And now, this year, we're doing 10?
8 to 10.
And we're back on pace to where it's reasonable to look at every 40 years or so, we could get through and address the needs that we have. That's a big, big deal for local government, especially for our secondary roads. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Lucy.
This graph shows the total county budget as originally certified for the last 7 years. As you can see, the dark blue shows the budgeted expenditures, and the red is the budgeted revenues. For the FY17 budget, expenses are 6.9% lower than the FY16 adopted budget, and the revenues are 6.7% lower than the FY16 adopted budget. This shows the current year distribution of taxes by taxing authority, and by current year I mean FY16 year, obviously. We're going to take a look on the following slide at an individual tax statement and where the dollars go, but this gives a snapshot of the overall dollars generated by each taxing authority. As you can see from this, not very well, apparently. Schools bring in 43% of the tax dollars in Story County. Cities are next at a little over 28%. The counties about 18%. And all of the other authorities are below 5%. You can see where all of those lie. This Story County chart is comparable to statewide information from the Iowa State Association of Counties 2016 financial overview. Overall, the schools levy 41%. Cities 29% and counties 22%. So we're about 4% lower than the statewide average on counties. I picked Story City this year. I haven't done Story City for a long time. So when you come to the treasurer's office to pay your taxes, the breakdown of how those dollars are distributed is represented here. And using a Story City resident, this is based on mostly last year's tax levies for the other entities because we don't have their budget certified to us yet until today. Schools do not get certified to us until April 15th. But if you have a home assessed at $100,000, the taxable value this year would be $55,600, as I said earlier, and your annual taxes would be $1,626. Of that, the school, which is Roland Story here, would receive 41% of the dollars. The city would get 32%. The county, 18%. The area school, which is DMAC, would get 2%. And the other entities, which include Ag Extension, the county assessor, and Story County Hospital, would get 7% of your dollars. If you live in Lafayette Township, which is also Roland Story School District, this is what that pie would look like. The total taxes would be $1,319. School would get 51% of those dollars, county 35%, and the township 3%. the other taxing entities would be are shown up there also. I'm going to post this on the website after today's meeting. Well, Lucy will. And we'll be available for public viewing. Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions. It is not, first of all, a comment. Again, you know, I want to compliment not only you, board, elected official department heads, as Supervisor Sanders said. You know, when you look at the snapshot of where we are and how we have budgeted, particularly over the last 3 years, a significant balanced budget that has come forth. Occasionally, I get these harebrained ideas, this is more or less a future comparison, and this is really something I have not shared with either of my two colleagues here. I think I mentioned it to our assessor down at the state capitol. But as we look to the future in terms of our taxing authority and budgeting, and looking at the aging population of Story County, those of us who are now senior citizens and beyond, I was wondering, is there ever a time that we might want to look at an idea of freezing the property tax at for those 70 and above at the current value? So, in other words, that once they reach age 70, we would freeze per 1,000 that levy rate. The state of Georgia, for example, I think does this. And what I'm thinking in terms of is another way to attract senior citizens back to Story County. You know, a lot of people leave and come back. Now, the challenge for that is potentially someone who is right in that area could decide to go out and drill a brand new million-dollar home or whatever, and they're still going to pay taxes at the whatever their taxes were frozen at age 70. What I'd like to have someone tell me is just look at that from an exploratory concept and think in terms of what impact would that have to the total dollars for all the other taxing entities. Because, as you know, we rely so much on property taxes to fund essential services and so forth. But I would be just curious, futuristic, to see what impact that would have as we, you know, look to future ways by which we can impact the overall quality of life for our citizens.
Well, Wayne, my first question would be, first of all, I like anything outside the box, but I don't believe, and I'll look to Wayne on this one, I don't believe that we as a county have the authority to change a levy rate just based on a certain, I mean, I know we've got a military exemption, but that comes from the state, but I don't think we have the authority to do anything just based on age at this point. That would have to go through the state first, because I don't know a mechanism for us to classify who would fit and who wouldn't. And so it would take something at the state,
right?
But I like anything that thinks outside the box on how we would do it. And as far as what kind of fiscal impact it would have, I think that's all data that we have. We could dig into and figure out what it would take to get that done. And I appreciate you bringing up something like that in your last ever budget hearing.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole idea. And you notice that I chose 70 instead of 75.
The question I have is, and something that may or may not be a senior citizen or beyond, if that was in fact the case and the levy rate went down, would you expect as a senior citizen to have your levy rate reduced, knowing full well that when it goes back up, it's not going to go back up? I mean, when you say freeze the levy rate...
Good point. Hadn't thought of it from that standpoint.
Okay.
But I'm thinking, yeah. But that's a good point. But yes, I did run this by one of our legislators, and that was his comment. I think this would require legislative action. My point would be is a lot of legislative things happen because a county initiates a certain concept or idea, And I just thought it would be something worth, you know, us looking at figures and facts, and it may be something that's not feasible as we move forward, but I was just curious to that. And then the other question, Lisa and Lucy, you sat in on the emergency management presentation at ISAC. Wasn't there at some point a discussion about possibly allowing emergency management some levying authority?
No.
That was a little different. That didn't come up.
No.
Okay.
They tried that a few years ago. That commission does not have levying authority.
Right.
So they have to bring their requests to the levying authority, which could be the city's combination, county, whatever. The county can levy in the general fund and or supplemental fund for their funding, and it does show up on your budget, mm-hmm. on your adoption,
right.
as a
there's a note on your tax statement,
right.
says it's included in this up above, and the amount is listed there. So no, they do not have levying authority. That is something that they have worked toward, but it's
a portion of the supplemental levy in
it's
Story
a portion
County.
Of the supplemental in Story County.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah,
there has been some confusion statewide about that. I think the intent of some people was that they wanted a separate levying authority, which didn't happen. But
so, as opposed to a separate levying authority, last year, 2 years ago was the first year that actually the dollars show up separately on the tax statement and on the adoption, but they are not a separate levying authority.
And when Supervisor Sanders mentioned, things that could happen at the legislature, futuristic, have we factored in what might happen had the state not fulfilled its responsibility to backfill what they had promised us, with the reduction that took place a year ago?
Business property tax credit
and so forth.
That's always hanging over us, sort of Damocles. Will they stick to their promises? It gets frozen at, I think, next year's level. Don't quote me on that. And then with any appropriations from the state,
we run to the bank to cash the check.
Right, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No. We need to open up.
I have another question, and Mike's sitting here. So I believe this budget, and help me with this, I believe in this budget we put $75,000 in, but we're only going to need $45,000 for, remind me of what I'm asking you about right here, for the planning.
Sensitive areas. $75,000, we thought that we could push some of that into FY18.
We're going to find $15,000 this year.
And then find some for this year, correct?
Yeah. And so my question is, I know we can reduce. Do we want to reduce it at this point, or do we want to just ask that conservation has $75,000 in that line item, but you're only going to spend what's necessary this year?
And your other option is just appropriate a certain amount too. You don't have to appropriate the whole dollar.
I think that would be a good answer, is just to appropriate what we think we're going to need.
Sure.
You're okay with that.
And then you can always amend if need be, if it comes in higher than anticipated. Yeah.
Okay. Anything further from you?
Not regarding the budget.
Okay.
Necessarily.
All right. Well, I'm going to open.
Oh, you want to? We need to.
We need to open.
Can we consider the resolution setting elected official salaries?
We'll do that as part of the public hearing. I'll get all through that.
Uh-huh.
It is as an item before the public hearing.
Oh, right.
But you want
to
do
But we it. Just have to have it approved before we close, before the budget is approved.
Perfect.
Okay, so I'm going to
This is a new resolution, so
yeah.
we're just...
I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing, and according to the state of Iowa, we have to approve the salaries for the elected officials prior to the adoption of the budget.
As a separate resolution?
As a separate resolution. So we do have a separate resolution in front of us. We actually have two resolutions with the same number. And I'll go ahead and read through what the proposed salaries are as determined by the compensation board that met in December 14th of last year.
For elected official salaries, the auditor, the current salary is $67,795. Proposed for a 4.4% increase for a recommended salary of $70,795. The county attorney is at $120,724 currently. The proposed increase from the compensation board was 5% for a recommended salary of $126,760. The recorder is currently at $67,795. The compensation board proposed a 4.425% increase, making the recorder salary, a recommended salary, $70,795. The sheriff is currently at $115,233. The compensation board recommended a 5% increase for the sheriff. His recommended salary was $120,995. The Board of Supervisors are currently at $67,538. The proposed increase was 3.269% for a recommended salary of $69,746. The Treasurer is currently at $67,795. Proposed increase was 4.425 for recommended salary of $70,795. You can either adopt those as listed or we can reduce those. And the thing to remember, if we want to reduce them, we have to reduce them all by the same rate.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that's not reflected in here, and I just want to make sure that it's okay that it's not reflected in here, is also recommended was a continuation of the chair of the Board of Supervisors receiving an extra $1,000. I don't see that reflected anywhere in this resolution. Does it need to be?
You also are approving these salaries when you approve the adoption of budget or adoption of the taxes and the budget, and that is listed separately there.
Okay.
So at the bottom of your page 2 for adoption of budget and certification of taxes, the supervisor chair, if different, is $1,000 higher.
Okay. With that in mind, I'm with the public hearing being open. If anybody has any comments that they would like to make towards these proposed salaries or the proposed budget, this would be the time for somebody to come forward and share those comments. Okay. I not see anybody move towards the mic. I'm going to ask for a motion on Resolution 1637 as it was presented.
Okay. Well, personally, I would like to move that we adopt the recommendations from the Compensation Board as proposed.
And I'll second, and then I'd like to talk about it just a second. Mm-hmm. We can.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and apparently we have some discussion.
We have a little discussion. So I just think it, so I disagree with this. Fundamentally, what's happening with the with rank and file employees in the county is they're getting a 2.5% increase plus 25 cents an hour. That is what's reflected for the supervisors in this. That's how you get the 2.5 plus 25 cents an hour. I philosophically believe that our elected officials, we should not be doing more for our elected officials than we're doing for rank and file employees. I felt that way all the way through. That said, I think that our compensation committee really did a thorough, while I disagree with them, I think they did a thorough job. I think they have reasonable rationale. The rationale behind the auditor, recorder, and treasurer, their increase, while it's greater than what I think we should be doing philosophically, it makes sense. It is comparable or gets them closer to comparable to like-sized counties. They're still not quite there. They're still a little behind, and I think it's reasonable to do that. The county attorney and the sheriff conversation is a little different. They've got different individuals that they compare themselves to. That was a hard-fought battle. The original proposal was much greater than the 5%. For both of them. And like I say, I just want to be really, really clear. I'm a huge believer in allowing those groups that are empowered to make these recommendations, to make their recommendation, even if it's something that I disagree with. That's where I am in this case. I believe it should be the flat 2.5% plus the 25 cents an hour for every elected official. That said, I made that case, that exact case, to the Compensation Committee. They disagreed. I think it's reasonable that they disagreed. I think that they have good rationale for these. And so for that reason, I'm going to support Resolution 1637, even though it's different than what I believe we should be doing.
Well, first of all, Mr. Sanders, I appreciate, you sharing that. I think for the general public, they don't realize the relationship of the role that is taken during the Compensation Board hearing, where all elected officials are present, as well as a representative of the supervisors, and we talk about the budgeted number, and we talk about the dollars that we are hoping to be able to give to all of our employees and so forth. But as you say, they do look at different comparables and bringing forth a recommendation. And I know historically for years, Stewart County, I'm not sure exactly how many years ago, did move to try to treat the Board of Supervisors on the same level as all the other elected officials. There was a period in time where there was a slight differentiation about those 7 or 8 years ago, where the Auditor, Treasurer, and Recorder did receive a little bit of a higher jump. But part of that also came about because the board, as we did in this case, we chose to keep ours the same philosophically as all the other elected officials. We could have asked the compensation board for a similar increase to mirror that of the auditor, treasurer, and recorder, and I believe. So I'm comfortable with the recommendation that came forward, that we are going to recommend that we remain basically the same. But I do think it's important that the public recognize that these discussions are not always as cut and dry as you might think. And I think your rationale and your presentation to the Compensation Board, I think, was well received. And I appreciate you stating that, and I also appreciate you willing to accept the resolution as proposed. I'm sure our Auditor, Treasurer, and Recorder would feel good about that as they look at their deputies and how things are happening within their area as well. So with that, that's all I have to say.
The thing that I keep in mind, I tend to land on this pretty close to where Mr. Sanders comes down on this, that, and as Lisa stated earlier, we've got two additional bargaining units now in Story County, so, and I believe we'll be under a 2-year contract as of July 1st with those bargaining units. I think all five of them will have 2 years. So what I think about is that in future years and future budget discussions that aren't quite as pleasant as these have been, these eight individuals are going to be the first individuals that are going to look at not seeing a pay increase, because that's within our authority. We don't have that luxury with a settled contract with a bargaining unit. If they're scheduled to get a 2.5% or 3% pay increase, that's what they'll receive unless they decide that they're going to waive that. And I don't think we've seen that happen in the past. So I think we've all had our opportunity to speak on this. So with that, I'll call the question. Mr. Clinton.
Aye.
Mr. Sanders.
Aye.
Aye. That's 1637 has been approved as presented with the salaries. So we didn't have anybody that wanted to speak on the budget itself. I'll give anybody that changed their mind an opportunity to come up and speak on that. If not, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board.
Okay. I would move approval of Resolution 1638, adopting the FY17 budget and certifying taxes as public, which includes assignment of funds as follows: amount in the general fund for a specific purpose, amount in the ending rural fund as unallocated local option tax at 40%, capital project fund as assigned for the Justice Center remodel, and to direct the auditor to properly certify and file the budget and certificate of taxes.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion?
It's a really, really good budget.
Yeah.
I think, Paul, you hit the nail on the head when you alluded to the reality that not every year is going to look like this. It took a lot of hard work, and it's taken 6 years of this group being together, really focusing in. But at least I think when you look out into what's coming in future years, the conversations are not going to go this smoothly. We're going to have to make some really, really tough decisions down the road. Fortunately, this budget puts us in a really strong fiscal position. Something we haven't even mentioned is where our ending fund balances, the total of our ending fund balances are, and how that looks relative. I want to say in 2008 or 9, we were down to where we were budgeting to have $6 million or so, maybe $7 million total in our ending fund balances, and we're up $14 million is what we're budgeting here. We've got a healthy rainy day fund, if you want to call it that, and we're in a good position to have what are going to be some really, really tough conversations as we go forward. Anybody who's considering running for supervisor better be aware that these conversations are going to get really, really tough as we look forward.
But as you pointed out,
we're in as good a position as we can be.
Absolutely.
But just because we're in a great position today doesn't mean it's going to stay that way.
That's true. That's the beauty of budgeting year in, year out.
With that, Mr. Sanders.
Aye.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Mr. Toot?
Aye.
That budget's been approved.
Thank you. Great job. And Lisa, again.
Thank you, Lisa,
as always. Yep.
Thanks for making it fairly easy for me this year.
We'll get used to it.
No, I know, right? Next year, Tahiti.
Okay, I think that should make it. Well, I'm going to close it. No, we're going to close the public hearing.
Yeah, we're good. All right.
We don't want to leave anything wide open. So, additional items: discussion and consideration of access from 505th Avenue to Cameron Estates. Luke Jensen, Scott Renault, Darren Moon, and Jerry Moore. Okay. We'll start off with Darren and Jerry.
It's working in. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'll go ahead and get started, give you a little background information first. This is the subdivision layout right here. It's Cameron School Road and 505th. The phase two lots aren't shown in here, but this is the phase one lots that are in. In general, we try to keep access to a subdivision off the subdivision roads. One, it creates for better local access, and two, there's also homeowner association agreements that they pay for these roads, so when lots on the outer edge take access off different roads, it's more difficult for the homeowner association to distribute how they pay for the internal roads and everything. So in general, we try to keep them off the internal roads. There was a request to take some off of 505th, when we met with the developer, we kind of came to an agreement. We would allow a few of them off of 505th, which is a gravel road. As long as they shared an access, we could limit the number of accesses we have. In general, we've always required 300-foot driveway spacing. These lots are, in general, 150-foot, so if you gave them individual drives, they wouldn't meet the 300-foot spacing. There is some SUDOS standards, which is a statewide urban design manual, that says you can get down to 150-foot spacing for local roads. In my opinion, I consider these internal roads as local roads, and this is a collector, which they require 300-foot spacing because we still have 55-mile-an-hour design speed on this road. Cars can be going that fast. So, and we've had that 300-foot policy in place since I've been here 18 years. So a request has come in. They have a shared access proposed here, but a request has come in from this proposed buyer to have their individual driveway come in here.
So would that mean that would be one there and one in the property immediately right next to it under that concept?
Yeah, you're not, Wayne, you're not approving one here. You're approving at least four if you approve one.
That's okay. Yeah, because each of those are four different parcels there.
Correct. Right now you've got an approved shared access between the bottom two and between the next two.
Right.
Which I understand this driveway has already been put in for a shared access, but this is where they would like to move the driveway. So.
Can you talk just a little bit about why, what the rationale behind the 300-foot?
Yeah, not only is it a safety issue, in my opinion, the 300 foot's for safety. If you get two cars exiting at the same time, one of them's going to block the view of the other one. The closer you get, the less sight distance you're going to be able to see down the road. And it's a traffic congestion type, but not so much out in the rural areas. It's more of a safety issue than sight distance. On the other hand, for me, it's not only a safety issue, it's a maintenance issue of the road. The more driveways you put in there, it's a rural section. Those driveways cause drainage problems. The water doesn't get off the road as well. Pushing snow off, it's harder to push snow off when you got driveways every 150 feet. Going in and out of mailboxes are difficult for our motor graders. They go at a pretty high speed to get through their entire district in the day. It just makes it more difficult for us to maintain the roads.
Yeah, and for me, Darren, it's even beyond that. And I'm going to tip my hand before we talk to Luke and Scott, if you guys want to come up and visit. But for me, it is entirely about when we first started talking about this subdivision, we were really, really clear on what we needed to have happen on 505th. There were a couple different designs that Fox Engineering put together of what this subdivision could potentially look like. Some of them took into account just having access off of internal community roads, and they decided that their best configuration was one that had access directly to 505th. And I think we were really, really clear at that point that in order to make that work, in order to maintain our standard requirements of 300 feet, we need to have shared driveways from these four. And I don't think we said we need to have shared driveways on these four unless there's somebody who wants to buy one of the lots that decides they don't want to have shared access. The second thing is the can of worms that I see this opening, if your regulations say 300 feet and you have exceptions for certain things, and then you start saying, well, we also have exceptions basically anytime somebody asks because it's more convenient for them, then I think you're opening up a can of worms you don't want to open up. I feel some real sympathy for the potential property buyers and home builders here. I just built a house. I know that sometimes dealing with government is trying on the patience, to say the least, on regulations that don't make sense and why they can't just be. I'm just asking for one driveway. Can't they be just a little bit flexible? But we have to look at it from a much bigger picture than that. It's not the one driveway. It's how that impacts everything else. Is our rationale any good for having the 300-foot separation? Was our rationale any good at all when we said that from day one, when this came forward, that these were going to be shared access for these four lots? If it was solid rationale then it's solid rationale now. And if it wasn't solid rationale then we should have had the conversation back when we were approving this subdivision. So, Darren, I don't know if I said anything that causes you concern. That's just the way I feel about this. And like I said, I have great sympathy for the people that want to buy this property. I completely understand where the developer is coming from. When you've got an opportunity to sell a lot, you see how much flexibility you can have. I just don't see this as being an area where we should be having flexibility. I think we were solid on the determination we made originally, and I think that's still solid today, this one property buyer notwithstanding. And Scott and Luke, I wanted to give you guys a full heads up of where I am so that you can address my concerns if you think, if you've got a reasonable case other than, well, this property buyer thinks it's going to be more convenient to do it this way, and yet, you know, when you share a driveway, you do have to work with your neighbor, which actually I think is a pretty good thing if you want to have a neighbor. But Scott, you're good at refuting things. Go at it.
All right, Scott Renell, Fox Engineering. We didn't contest this. This is a fairly standard request to have a 300-foot spacing, and really maybe we should have looked at this a little stronger because we're talking about a street that has 80 cars per day, so it's really ultra low volume. The county's, I think, made also a decision that the bridge that goes over the Squire Creek, which connects with...
We haven't made any decision yet, but I'm pushing us to move toward that decision, right. But no decision has been made.
So that's going to disconnect. That'll be basically a dead-end road. So it's still going to be maintained as a low-volume road. And so we went back and looked at the standards for a low-volume road and the number of accesses allowed. And though it is an urban standard, this is a rural development standard that's in SUDAS that allows for 150-foot spacing. I don't disagree with what Darren says about the maintenance on the road and things like that. I usually, we're fairly careful about how the driveways get built so that they don't cause the county any issues. Mailboxes are not an issue here. The postmaster has us a single mailbox within the entry of the development, so mailboxes will not be out on this particular project. So it really goes back to in evaluation of this is a low volume road, have a a very low number of accesses even going to be allowed. And you're correct that, we're asking for four. But we did try to incentivize to get this done. It's just everybody wants to have their own thing. And again, sure. It goes back to the standards, what's allowed. And so by the standards, I do believe it's allowed. I certainly understand Darren's points. And like I said, we don't normally contest these. It's just... when we look at the low volume nature of the road that we would request that we...
Sure. Well, I fully recognize that a buyer will probably pay less for a lot with shared access than they will for a lot that has direct access, all other things being equal. My other question is, when we get to future phases and you guys go ahead and build to the north, how many more of these lots? Because it's more than just four.
No, it's not more than just four. Okay. I wish I had brought that, but there's another road that comes in. And there's only two lots, and they access off of the interior road. There's no...
So it would, if we approve this, we would be approving four accesses, where right now we've got two approved access points.
Right.
We'd be reducing our spacing from 300, which is our standard requirement, down to about 150. I mean, I know it's a little greater than that.
Yeah, it's about just 150, 160 feet. Can you go back to that?
So all told, Bo, in that area, if you look at the landscape of the other developments, you've got, but these are the only ones that's going to access this particular road.
That's correct. This street comes up and comes into here, and there's two lots that are about the same size as these that access off of the interior road that it gets built here. So the only driveways that we're asking are to split this one and to split this one. And we're asking those in advance, but on the other hand, if these two builders want to just leave the driveway there, because we've tried to incentivize this because we knew it would be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We knew it would be an issue before. So the developer went ahead and put the driveways in, put the culverts in. So there's more expense involved, but less expense for the home builders. So we were trying to incentivize them to do that. And because we knew that we'd be here asking that.
Sure.
And so the developer did what he could to do that. But these are the only... these are the four that we're requesting, but it's not definitive that we would split these apart.
Yeah, right now we got one request, right?
Which creates two.
That's right. Creates two.
Because we're not going to leave, this is a shared driveway. if we put a new driveway in here, we're anticipating taking this one out, and then there'll be a separate one.
Sure, but what we need to recognize as well is if we approve this one, there's no real way to say no to the two lots to the north.
Right, and I think that's
right.
That's a legitimate point, and we probably should just go ahead and ask for both of them, so we'd have go from two accesses to four. But we're not asking it for the next subdivision, because that access is off an interior road.
Okay. Darren and Scott, tell me what's the likelihood, since we're talking about just a few developments on this particular road, that in itself cannot be set up as a private drive, and the county does not maintain that road at all, and those homeowners are responsible for taking care of all of that if, you know, they wanted to do so. What prevents that from happening under this scenario? Because it's still a part of Cameron Estates, is it not? And does that mean that the other areas that's outletting someplace else are...
Darren, let me say first why, because I remember our conversation. Wayne, that was something that we talked about early on when we were talking about doing this project, and I think I was the one, if I'm not mistaken, I was the one pushing to just turn 505th over to the developer and make that part of their road. And I think Darren at that point correctly pointed out that we got other access points for other residents that are outside this subdivision that have to utilize 505th, especially if, as Scott rightly points out, we go down the road of restricting access from the east on 190th, then that becomes the only access for these property owners that live to the west and the north of 505th. And so that'd be great if that was an option. I don't think that's a viable option at all. I think our two options here are really, really clear. It's either that we step up and say, no, that was the agreement. We recognize it creates issues with at least this one buyer and potentially three other, potentially all four, for all four lots, but we were clear up front. Or we say, no, you know what? Scott makes a good point. There's only 80, right now, there's only 80 drivers a day on this road. It's not a heavily traveled road. It is our intention to move down the road of further restricting access on this road, and so we can go back and overturn our original decision. I know where I sit today. You guys can probably convince me that I'm wrong on where I sit today. Where I sit right now, it is, you know, I recognize that it's a harder lot to sell. I get it. But we were really, really straightforward with that. And, Scott, I feel like we talked about this ahead of time. I mean, I don't think this just got stuck in there.
We definitely did.
Yeah, we did. We're not disputing that at all. And like I said, the developer, you know, we had this conversation with the developer. We need to make it an incentive so that the driveway is there. So we went ahead and installed them. And so we're here on the behalf of the developer trying to sell the lot, and the lot buyer wants a very specific thing.
Sure, absolutely.
And again, you know, what we did is went back and looked, you know, asked Darren about how many vehicles per day we're looking at. We're looking at 80. Even if you shut the street off, you're probably not going to do much more than double that. You're going to go to 160. You're still a low-volume road. I don't think the speeds are quite as high on this road section as some. It's a fairly narrow road section, plus you got to stop to turn on the camera. And so I don't see high speeds as being an issue here. We'd love to have it paved. To kind of maybe answer Wayne's question a little bit, is if we had both sides of the road, we probably wouldn't be having this discussion,
right,
because we would probably want to pave it at least and maybe take it over, and then we'd expect some... Then the driveway issues kind of get taken care of when you pave it, because it's not a maintenance issue where the grader has to deal with, you know, driveways,
right,
either. So
I read the email yesterday that was sent to us from the proposed homeowner, and I can certainly sympathize with him, but I have to come back to the discussions that were held prior to the approval of the subdivision. And then I have to look forward to see that, in all likelihood, this isn't going to be the only rural subdivision that we're going to deal with in the future. And you know, the regulations are there for a reason. It's still a county road, and from what I can see, it will remain a county road and under our jurisdiction. I'm really troubled if we grant this exception. I don't know how we can turn around and deny somebody else in the future who's asking for the same thing. It's unfortunate that it turns out this way, but for me, I just
it's difficult for me to tell this individual that no, we're not going to grant a request, but for me it's not one individual, it's for everything that we're going to see in the future, and how do we reconcile saying, okay, you can do it this time, but when somebody comes forward and it's 6 months or a year and wants to do something else, how do we say, no, we're not going to let you do this? So that's,
well, and that's why I referenced the standards, because you've got to go to the standards of a low-volume road. And so, and if we thought it was going to be more than a low-volume road at some period of time, then it's a different discussion. But if it's more than a low-volume road, we're probably going to pave it. So then it's still a different discussion. Mm-hmm. But all of what Darren said is valid, and I understand the supervisor's point, but we do think there's some rational to relook at it, and that's what we're here for.
Absolutely.
Well, the only thing that I would add is that when I first proposed this and I was interested more or less to hear Darren's take, our county engineer's point on this, and if I felt that I received this is a doable solution, it's something that we felt would be in the best interest of traffic safety and other kinds of things, I would have been much more inclined of giving consideration. But what I'm hearing is that this is not doesn't appear to be the recommendation of the county engineer that we should alter our standards for this one particular location. And that kind of is the deciding factor, more or less, for me. And I guess that's why we have professionals involved in this area to give us that type of advice as we consider how our development standards are going to be impacted.
Yeah, Paul and Wayne, I agree with both of you guys. For me, it's simply if we're going to change something like this, somebody's going to have to convince me that either we were wrong originally, either we didn't consider it fully when we originally put in this requirement, right? When we were originally platting the subdivision, we didn't talk about this, we didn't consider the ramifications, I think we did, or two, our rationale at that point was not the reality on the ground today. Now, I think Scott goes down the road of making that case that this is not a high-volume road. We don't expect it to be a high-volume road. Maybe you can change it. And all I would say to that is it wasn't a high-volume road at that point.
When we started,
originally, I think our first conversation talked about, well, would the county consider coming in and paving this, even though we don't have both sides? And the county said, no, it's not our position to ever pave that. So you know you're dealing with a gravel road. You know that reduces the value of those lots. And now you know there's a shared driveway. I don't hear anything in this conversation other than we've got a potential buyer who really, really wants to have individual access, and I don't think that can be the rationale. It's not our job, once we approve this subdivision, to go back and start to finagle with something unless there is solid rationale above and beyond the marketability that we knew was going to be there when we originally approved it.
Okay. This is going to require action, so...
Are we doing it in the affirmative?
It's discussion and reconsideration of access.
All right, so I'll move that we reconsider access along 505th, and I'll actually do it one step further for these four lots, allowing individual access for each of those four lots.
I will second the motion for the reconsideration.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second not to reconsider.
No, I'm worried that we do reconsider.
We do reconsider. And then this has to be done because that's what the statement of this is. We have to open that up in order to determine what our next step will be. So the motion now is to be able to take a look at this request.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor? Well, we'll do roll call.
Yes. Sanders?
No.
Clinton?
No.
Two?
No.
Thank you guys for
thanks,
appreciate it.
Luke, sorry to make your job tougher, man.
All right, we got through that one. Discussion and consideration of amendment number one to the Central Iowa Case Management 28E agreement, Deb Shildroff.
Sorry to confuse you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, as mentioned in our public hearing for the fiscal year 17 budget, we've got some changes going on, such as case management, and we've had a few of those discussions already throughout this fiscal year. The amendment before you is related to the 20E agreement that Story County is a part of, along with Hardin County and Franklin County, to provide case management services through a unit called Central Iowa Case Management. The Central Iowa Case Management Board has been discussing the closure of the unit due to loss of staff with the implementation of the managed care model that will take effect on April 1st. We have not yet transitioned any cases to the MCOs. We're still learning to figure out how that will go. But we've had loss of staff. Franklin County is down to one staff person. Hardin County is down to one staff person who will be retiring in July. And then in Story County, we have five staff. So we're about half of where we were as of last July. So the purpose of the amendment is to change the termination date. In the original agreement, in order to back out of the 28E, we would have had to give notice December 15th. Since the Central Iowa Case Management Board decided in January to close the unit as of June 30th, we obviously missed that December 15th date. So we are now changing that to just say that the end date of this agreement will be June 30th of 2016. The other thing that it highlights is that we still will have membership of all three counties in sharing whatever assets remain or whatever debts are incurred as a result of doing business as Central Iowa Case Management. So that provision will remain the same as it has in the original agreement. So that will be dependent upon the size of the debt and the involvement of all three counties and whether or not they'll pay towards the debt or if there are funds that we end up receiving as a result of our cost settlement with Iowa Medicaid, then those dollars will go to each county as outlined in the original agreement.
Talk about that for just a second, Deb. So help me understand. So you're telling me that Franklin and Hardin either don't have staff or won't have staff relatively soon.
Right.
We have staff, but it's a greatly reduced number from where we were. Are there still services? Are there still revenues and expenses going on in this? And what is our expectation of what that's going to look like through June 30th?
Both revenues and expenses have been declining. As we've lost staff, we've declined or we have had a decrease in expenditures related to salaries. But on the flip side, without all of those staff members, we're not able to generate as many billable units as we had originally thought we would when we put together the cost report last July. So there's been, there'll continue to be a decline in both expenditures and revenues. We still will be required to do a final cost report and turn that into IME, although that cost report isn't going to be for the full fiscal year because the implementation of the MCO model starts April 1st. So our cost report will essentially be 9 months of the fiscal year versus the full 12 months. But we'll still have to do that, and it could probably be 12 to 18 months out after we submit it before it actually gets settled.
Okay. My simple question is, or maybe it's not simple, it's a simple question to ask, maybe hard to answer. By doing this, are we putting Story County in any jeopardy at all of assuming more of the expenses with knowing that revenues are declining? Now it sounds to me like any services coming out of Franklin Park will be provided by Story County through June 30th because they don't have staff to provide them. Are we putting Story County at any risk by doing this?
Franklin and Hardin still have staff, and they will have. Hardin County staff member is going to stay and will through June 30th and will retire in July. And then the individual that's up in Franklin County will be taking a job through the region, but she is still on board to provide services through June 30th as well. So Story County isn't assuming any additional cases or any additional work. Or those other two counties, we're still doing the work that needs to be done here for the Story County clients. Does that help answer? I mean, we have the bulk of the expenses just because we still have most of the staff, but that's, again, we'll be able to recoup most of those through our cost report settlement.
But Debbie, you mentioned the term billable hours, and it's directly tied to the role of the case manager in working with potential clients that need the services. But as part of our overall ability to make sure that clients in Story County are served based on their particular needs, if we lose the case management component, does this mean that we as a county have to pick up those services, or is the region going to be in a position to say that we recognize through this whole managed care situation and the shift in case management, there's still clients that need to be served, and they're going to be able to step in and cover that rather than having us come to assume that? You see where I'm trying to go here? I mean, our philosophy has always been, we want to do everything we can to maintain a certain level of service to those in need. And if all of the changes that we had no control over is causing us to lose staff, at some point that means that the services is being reduced, at least at the same level, and they may be receiving services, but they've got to go. I mean, we've got to have somebody to coordinate where they go to get the service. So that's my real concern, is what is the future under this scenario for our clients to receive the level of service that we think is that they deserve?
As of right now, it is the managed care organization's responsibility for providing case management services. And so they're appearing to be pulling all of that in-house, which is causing the case management units to close or significantly decrease in size as a result of those changes. So anybody who's on Medicaid or receiving case management, that will be provided through their managed care organization that they are either assigned to or they signed up with. So the region's not going to have
anything
to do with that. The region will continue to fund services for people who are waiting for a waiver spot or that sort of thing, or maybe they'll gap fund services while somebody is applying for Medicaid or reapplying for Medicaid. So that role will continue for the region. But for case management, it's up to each MCO how they are going to be providing that, and it looks like most of them are providing that in-house at this point in time. So is that better for the client? We hope there's some good that comes out of this. I think that all remains to be seen because it is such a new model for the state. I just know that locally our case management staff has been working very close with families and clients and providers and giving them all the information they need to help make this a smooth transition.
Yep. Thank you. Okay.
So, I'll move approval of Amendment Number 1 to the Central Iowa Case Management 20E agreement, which ends the unit as of June
30, 2016. Second.
A motion and a second. Is there anything further?
The other counties have to do the same as we're doing?
They have to do the same, and they both have approved the amendment. So
got it.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Duke?
Aye.
Thank you, Deb.
All right, thank you.
Next is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1639, road embargo that limits be established and signs be erected, advising of the permissible maximum weights thereof on 570th, et cetera. Darren Moon.
Can you get the lights, Billy? Thanks. Okay, I hope you can see this. As you know, this is more of an issue, more than just a road embargo issue. This also addresses the 303rd lane issue. But this is the road I'm talking about right here. 2.5 miles of 570th. There's no crossroads in between that 2.5 miles, so that's the only access in and out. And this is the 303rd lane is right here. Dream Lake is here, and this is the interstate, just to give you perspective where you are. What we had, hard to see, but there's a lot taken out right here. The pipeline purchased this whole piece of ground here, and they sold a lot here to the power company for a substation, which is somewhat for the pipeline. This is in construction right now. They're rocking the whole site and pouring concrete, and this is a level B dirt road. But last week, they're bringing in dirt to build up the site and rock, and completely tearing up 570 to the north. There's a bridge down here to the south. It's actually our narrowest bridge in the county, so they're kind of avoiding the south. But once they tore that up, they did start coming from the south a little bit, but I talked to them and put a stop to that. But this is the level B road facing west. This is our level B sign and a dead end sign. Back here is where the substation is going. This is right after we bladed the road, so to give you an idea how bad it was before. The residents that live along there couldn't even get through. It was torn up so bad. This is becoming a bad frost boil year for us on secondary roads. This is one of the roads that it just couldn't take the heavy loading. You can see the mortar grader just disappearing out of sight over the hill, so he had just bladed this, and it's just barely vehicles, small cars can get through this at this point. So I have no mechanism to stop traffic as long as they're legal loads, and they were just legal. As soon as he got over that hill, there was 7 tandem trucks full of dirt ready to come down the road and tear it up again. So we were out there for 2 days straight rocking and keeping this thing open, and I could not stop them. That's the reason for this resolution, would give me at least authority to embargo the road and put a stop to them, because I discussed it with them about stopping for the day, and they had no interest in doing that. They're willing to pay for all the rock and everything put on the road, but they won't stop hauling. And at some point, when the residents can't get to their homes, we got to stop hauling. So that's what the resolution would allow me to do in the future. We would not post the resolution and the ordinance, or not the ordinance, but the embargo doesn't come effective until we put the signs on the road. So I would hold off on doing that until we absolutely had to.
Why wouldn't you put them out there?
It would essentially shut them down construction-wise.
Oh, okay.
I had another conversation with them this morning, a conference call with the power company, because they've been using this road, I don't know how, to get all that stuff back there, because it's just a dirt road. They've been putting a dozer on it and keeping it flattened out the best they could, but with the rain last night,
yeah,
they can't wait to get down there. So, of course, it's an emergency for them today. They got to get something done. 6 months ago, they sent out an environmental impact study, and I put my comments in there about this road. I've tried to inform them as much as I could that they need to address this before it becomes an emergency, and now it's an emergency for them. They're saying they got to shut down production if we don't allow them to rock the road and everything. It's like, well, they probably have called you this morning to get on the board agenda for next Tuesday. I hope they did. That's what I told them to do, to discuss what the options are for this road, to bring it back to an A or vacate it and get them easements back there, and then they can do whatever they want with the road. But
this is actually a topic that I want to talk about later in our agenda under liaison assignments, but I think it's appropriate now. We've got Mike Cox here. Obviously, IUB just approved the pipeline, so that is a reality. We do not have an easement at this point with the pipeline company. We did, in fact, negotiate. I want to say it was early in the fall. We negotiated with the pipeline. We were, as a county, we were worried about some things that impacted conservation. We were worried about the extremely low liability limits, which is $250,000 required by the state. And I feel like we made great headway on what that would look like if we approve the easement. It is now time, as I see it, for us to get in and approve the easement for the pipeline. But I think this is part of the conversation. I see no way that it's to the benefit of the residents of Story County to take this from a level B back to a level A. I see no way to rock this road if it remains a level B. I think by law we can't rock this road or allow it to be rocked if it stays a level B. And so that leads me to the final alternative, which is find a way to relinquish this as a road, to abandon it. And we've got, I think, is there four landowners now?
Actually, this is one property owner, and they have access off I-70.
Okay.
So I don't know if they'd be agreeable to it, but we could do it. And then this is all pipeline, and then this is a separate property owner. So it really be the pipeline, the only one that we're cutting.
Yeah, and so what I'm suggesting is now part of our conversation has changed. And this is beyond the conversation of putting the embargo on, because clearly we got to protect our roads and we got to make it passable for our citizens and our residents that need to use the road. And so I think we need to embargo. But we need to start moving forward rapidly on this easement with the pipeline company. Part of that conversation has to be, in my mind, abandoning this road, make it a private drive, and then they handle it however they handle it.
But isn't that, though, I'm following you, yep. And it's part of the discussion, but isn't it two separate entities, though? The easement itself did not have anything to do with this road.
But now's the time. So we have not granted the easement yet, and specifically, now we've got very little control of the easement on other county property where it crosses the right-of-way. The one place that we maintain at least some level of control is where the easement crosses conservation property. Right. Now, I tend to be one of those that thinks if we were to try to build a wall right there and say, no, you can't, you know, you shall not pass, we would ultimately lose that. And I'm not suggesting that we do that, but I am suggesting that we are in a position right now where we better put some things on the table in terms of the $250,000 liability. It better be greater than that. I believe it is greater than that. In terms of the way our conservation ground is going to be treated, and now something we have not discussed with them that I know of to this point is how we're going to handle this level B road. There seems to me to be this underlying assumption from both the pipeline company and the power company that it's the county's responsibility to make sure that they can get back here and build on this property, and I don't believe that it is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a level B road. Yeah. It's been a level B road.
Right. Right.
It's not like we're pulling the rug out from under them. It is what it is,
right.
And I view our alternative, our best alternative, until somebody convinces me otherwise, to be to abandon this road and let them deal with it, and it becomes their driveway back to their property.
Well, I think the comment you're making is very appropriate. This was mentioned last night at the Conservation Board meeting, and Mike has sent forwarded a communication on to the county attorney's office regarding taking a look at that, and while no action was basically taken, they recognized the need to expedite that discussion in terms of what do we do now that this is has been approved by the utility board and so forth. But this is another component of that. And I guess while this really, now this board is outside of Conservation Board's purview, but Mike, is, I guess I want to ask the question, and Mike, as you hear this, do you see that discussion, will it, in your opinion, have any impact on our tying that into the discussion on the easement that we are considering, that we had reached a tentative agreement early on with the conservation?
I don't want to muddy the waters. All the only action in front of us today is the embargo. Yeah.
Right, right. And I understand
the
that
is a completely separate,
right.
separate issue.
Right.
So I think
for
the discussion this morning, we need to stick with the resolution of 2020.
Well, what I'm basically saying is I'm all in support of that conversation, but I want to make sure that there is the.
Well, let's do this, because I think Paul's 100%
right.
Let me hold that other conversation when we get to the liaison assignments. Clearly, it's not something we can take any action on today. We can't do anything about that second part of the conversation, but I think it's time for us to start to have it and direct staff to start to move forward so that we can get to a decision point here. With that, I will move the embargo that load limits on 570th. And that's my motion, and then I'll have a comment if you
Okay.
Second.
You're on motion in a second. Go ahead.
My comment is the intention of this embargo is to allow our county engineer to work with any entity that's wanting to do any kind of work that's damaging our roads and using heavy loads, to work with them to maintain the road at the level we need it maintained at. And if they are willing to take into account things like road conditions and how they're doing things, then our county engineer has the ability to put up these signs and limit the weight on this road, effectively stopping them if they won't stop just when they're asked to.
What kind of shape is it in now? Before the rain,
the trucks have decreased significantly just a few a day, so we're able to keep up with it. It's better. I haven't seen it today after rain, so I can't answer that question.
All right.
I know the Level B road is in bad shape because that's what they called me about this morning. They're going to have to shut down operations.
And Darren, how different is this from the wind farm and the road work that was done when the wind towers went in? And
it's real similar. They didn't go on any Level B roads, fortunately,
right,
for that.
But they did, like, the access getting into the areas, and they took full responsibility of rocking those.
They built their own.
They built their own road, in other words, yeah. Okay.
Okay. The motion and a second in our discussion. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Go
just
for it.
For informational purposes, I have a couple more things I wanted to add on this. It could tie into the whole agreement we have with the pipeline. Another issue is dust. I've had complaints about dust on 570 because of the construction. They did take it to the DNR, and we discussed with the DNR. We were adding so much rock on the road, putting dust control down wouldn't have done any good because we were putting so much rock on top of it. But traffic has went down since then. But once this becomes more of a pipeline, right now it's the power company. When it becomes more of a pipeline construction, I am working on a road use agreement for the haul routes. I've got a haul route map for the entire 15-mile construction. I've sent a draft to the pipeline. They're reviewing it. Once I get that back, I'll bring it to the board for approval. But what that does is require them to put dust control down in front of all the houses. It limits, such when they start damaging the road, there's stipulations in there. They need to stop hauling if they're causing damage. But that agreement's yet coming, so that might be tied into the whole discussion. We want to get that agreement approved before we maybe make other agreements with the pipeline. But I want to make you aware of that. At least that's coming.
Sounds good.
And I think we probably need to leave the engineer some direction on start the process as far as abandoning. What it would take to abandon 300 and 3rd Lane. I mean, doesn't that take the hearing, doesn't it, to abandon that? I mean, you did the one down north of Maxwell here a couple of years ago.
It does. I'm hoping they'll be on the agenda next Tuesday to discuss what they would like to see. So every time I bring that up, they don't seem interested in that. And I don't know if it's because of a certain landowner they feel they have an issue with, or I don't know why they're not interested in that. They seem to be pushing bringing it back to an A, and I don't think that's where the county wants to head. But.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Well, can we at this point just ask that that all staff that are impacted, and when I say all staff that would be part of this, it's, in my mind, it's Darren, Mike, Jerry, Ethan, they get together and take a hard look at this entire pipeline and pumping station. I mean, we got to recognize this is not going to be like just laying the pipeline everywhere else. This is where the one pumping station in Iowa is going to go on this pipeline. We get one bite of the apple at this, at making this agreement and granting the easement. I don't think we're in a huge position of power in this. I think our hands are really tied, but we do have some, I believe, with the easement crossing conservation ground, and we do have some with how this road is treated, and we need to do what's in the best interest of Story County, knowing that pipeline and that pumping station are coming through. But I'd like to ask that the four of you guys get together and start the conversation of what we need to be considering as a board as we go through it.
Correct.
Good.
Next is consideration of Resolution 1640 approving the Ames Urban Fringe future land use classes and framework map for the south end of Cedar Lane. Ryan, this one.
Morning.
Hi, Ryan. How's it going?
I'm great.
I'm
beautiful
glad.
Day out there, isn't it? As already stated, this is a request for an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, the land use framework. There's two maps in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, the land use framework map, as well as the land use classes map. This would be a consideration of an amendment to both of those maps for a 9.72 gross acre parcel located at the end, at the very south end of Cedar Lane, just west of University Boulevard there. I got some maps here to show you in a minute. The current land use designation is agricultural and farm service, and the proposed land use would then become urban residential. The current zoning in A1 is A1 agricultural, and the property is owned by Ferguson Enterprises, and the applicant is Steve Ferguson. Again, the applicant is seeking an amendment for this 9.72 acre parcel of land. This area is triangular in shape and is adjacent to and immediately south of other lands owned by Ferguson Enterprises. And again, this request is for two county map changes, amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan land use framework map from agricultural and farm service to urban residential, and an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan from rural services and ag conservation to urban services area. Here you can see highlighted in the dashed area, that triangular shaped piece of land directly to the north. You can see that the large parcel of land also owned by Ferguson. And I'll also highlight on this map that you can see all the lands that are surrounding this triangular piece of land outside of the Ferguson are owned by Iowa State or the State of Iowa or the Board of Regents. Here you can see two maps. One is the current Ames Urban Fringe Plan designation. On the left, you can see that green area is Ag Farm Service, and the beige, orangish highlighted portion is urban services area. And then you can see what is proposed through this amendment change is turning that portion again to that beige area. A little bit of background on this request. The Ferguson's explored this idea originally in an annexation request in 2014. Other properties in the area were also requesting annexation, but they subsequently withdrew their applications, so the Ferguson's did as well. And at that time, it resulted in the annexation of only the land included in the ISU Research Park. At that time, the triangular piece was not included in the application because it was not identified as an allowable growth area in the Ames LUPP or designated for urban services in the Fringe Plan. The Fringe Plan anticipated at that time that it was adopted in 2006 that the growth of the city would not extend south of the half section line that is north of the property line of the subject area. South of this half section line, again, like I already pointed out, much of the land is owned by Iowa State University, the foundation or the Committee for Agricultural Development, so all government essentially owned lands. The subject request is the only privately owned property in this vicinity. Including this as urban residential, as stated in our Ames Urban Fringe Plan, allows for its future annexation and development because urban residential essentially states that these lands cannot be developed until they're annexed into the city, as well as urban residential are the only lands that the city of Ames is allowed to annex into. Like already stated, it's a designated Ag Farm Service, a subclass of the Rural Service Ag Conservation Area. And again, to accommodate the request for annexation, amendment must be made to designate this land as urban residential, a subclass of urban services area. To include it in the allowable growth area of the city for development, this is according to the City of Ames, would only have a minimal impact on the provision of services by the city. This is one of the policy statements of the urban services area that any lands designated on that would not overly burden city provision of resources to that development. Again, our staff's analysis, and again, this is a all amendments to the interim fringe plan require a joint staff report prepared by all the city and county staff. So this is our cooperative analysis of this area. This is an isolated tract with irregular boundaries. It would be difficult to efficiently farm once the neighboring property to the north, again, that Ferguson owns. If you can view that it's built out and developed, it would essentially landlock this parcel and make it difficult to farm in the future. Unless Iowa State bought it. And a little bit of background, they have tried to discuss in the past few years discussions with Iowa State for a possible land swap to Iowa State land that's just on the west side of Cedar Lane that's currently in the city limits, but those discussions have stalled, and so they're pursuing.
When was the last time you heard that those discussions had stalled?
This summer, when this first was brought to our attention.
So does us taking action help, hinder, or make no difference at all if, in fact, those conversations are still going on?
I would say it would help those conversations a little bit further, because if this property is developed and you have development essentially within areas surrounded by Iowa State that's currently in agricultural policy, they're part of their research program, it would make it more difficult for them to possibly farm that area.
But us taking this action would not preclude Iowa State, if they so chose, from acquiring the property and continuing to use it agriculturally.
Yeah, correct. All this does is allow the opportunity for the city to annex it for future development. Does that answer?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, and it looks that this half section line that's just to the north, that's the north boundary of this parcel, didn't take into account the individual ownership patterns. It isolated this parcel from the remainder of Ferguson's 40-acre development parcels that are currently urban residential. The city views this area as suitable for single-family home development and is in accordance with their land use policies. Urban residential, again, designation is consistent with the rest of the surrounding lands to the north. We haven't received any comments regarding this request nor questions. The City of Ames Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval at their February 17th, 2016 meeting, and the council approved the amendment request at their March 1st meeting. And our Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the amendment request at their March 2nd meeting on a unanimous vote. And just found out that yesterday evening, city staff met with City of Gilbert, who's also part of this plan. If you recall, any amendments to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan requires approval from all three governing bodies.
Isn't it interesting that Gilbert just weighed in on this?
In a lot of cases in the past, they've waived their requirement, but they essentially said last night that they had no issues with this one. So I don't think there was a lot of discussion regarding it. But I just thought I'd throw that in since we found that out. I found that out this morning. So with that, I leave you with the following three alternatives. Essentially to accept the recommendation of Planning and Zoning Commission and adopting Resolution 1640 or not.
I move adoption of Resolution 1640.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Duke?
Aye.
Thank you.
That takes us to public comment, section number two, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. I see anybody moving to the mic. Liaison assignments to committee meetings. Wayne.
Briefly, the Conservation Board met last evening. They had a full agenda, certainly at this time of year. Some of the things was just approving a couple lease agreements, and we're getting back into the goat business, which sounds really, really neat.
They go stay at your house, Mike?
And then again, there was moving forward with the review of the bylaws and rules and regulations and so forth. And one of the topics that would be of interest to us, and we'll hear about a little bit later, that was discussed was the discussion on Chapter 4 and the amendment Appendix D of the Story County C2C plan. That was approved with a recommended suggested change that Mike is going to take before the C2C body. I thought the discussion was very germane to clearly helping understand the unique relationship between the duties and responsibilities of conservation that's a little bit different perhaps than some other departments. Some of the conversation ended in the format with the terms of whether we're talking about policy or strategies, and Mike was asked to take that forward. I didn't see it as a hindrance in any way, shape, or form, but I think it's something that we, when it's brought back to us at a later time, might want to at least acknowledge that the Conservation Board and Mike did have some, I thought, some very appropriate comments to make regarding that C2C plan, and we'll see how that all plays out as we move forward. And then the board did approve the collective bargaining agreement that was entered in. And you guys are probably a little bit familiar with that, but it had to go before the Conservation Board as well. And then there was Amendment 7 to the Professional Service Agreement for Shad Hattery dealing with Dakin's Lake, and that primarily was to deal with the design of the trail between downtown Zeering and Highway 65, and Shad Hattery would be chosen to do the design phase of that trail route and so forth. And that was just for the design phase, and there will be, probably at a later time, more discussions about the actual work that would be done once that has been presented to us. And then another thing that I just wanted to acknowledge is that the Iowa Association of Naturalists awarded Mike Metz, who's been a longstanding member of our community in support of conservation issues, a naturalist award for his volunteerism. And I think I just wanted, as a board, to also acknowledge the many years of ongoing service and commitment that Mike Metz has made to conservation through volunteerism and be in support of a special recognition or acknowledgement from this board for what all he's done. And I just wanted to bring that to our attention at this point. So that's it.
We dealt with my direction for staff to start to look at our potential easement agreement with the pipeline building.
Announcements, Wayne.
And I don't know if this is necessarily there. I'm going to try to see if I can adjust my schedule. Mike was informing us that there is going to be a meeting at the research park tomorrow talking about the stream stabilization project and bringing in several key individuals as they're talking about planning and so forth with that. And I think that has great potential, again, of seeking a lot of outside expertise as they move forward with that particular area. So I found that to be something that if I can readjust my schedule, I may try to join in. I didn't know what appropriate gear I'd have to wear for that. I don't know where. I assume we'll be walking outdoors along the area. Will this drill to be inside?
Inside.
Just inside. Okay.
I think it's great that this project is opening the door for Mike and conservation to form partnerships with multiple entities that we've had limited contact with in the past. And so, Wayne, I appreciate if you're able to go. That's a really good thing. I do want to say, what, the 16 of these budget hearings that you've set in on now?
Yeah.
Really, really well done. And I don't like that this is going to be a year full of laughs with you, but this is a big one in terms of what the Board of Supervisors is empowered statutorily to do. Just appreciate your involvement and insights as we put together what I think is as good a budget as the three of us have put together in our time here.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for the comments.
It's a good note to send you down the road.
Oh, absolutely.
When that time comes.
Absolutely.
All right. I'll take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion in a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned. Aye.